For October the 14th, 2022, we talk about Medieval Dynasty, Outer Wilds, Echoes of the Eye, Ori and the Blind Forest, and much more. Welcome to Level 432. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Ben.
Hey.
Hey.
Yeah. Nice to be back.
Yeah, you were out of town last week.
Yeah, I got to go back. It was kind of an impromptu trip, but I got to go back to Austin, Texas, and see a couple friends who I hadn't seen in a while, and one of my old neighbors and some coworkers, so it was a lot of fun.
Fun.
And yeah, one of the I'll say this for like what I've been doing the past week. One of the highlights is I saw a movie called Triangle of Sadness, which is directed by the same person who did Force Majeure, but it was very, very good, and you should see it with knowing as little as possible about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Triangle of Sadness. Is this a happy movie?
It is actually a comedy, despite the name of it. So I think that There's things to be sad about in the movie, for sure, but yeah.
I like the idea that every movie must be characterized by a single emotion.
Right. Anything like, more
you can only explore one at a time. Really, yeah. you can't do any emotion justice if you try to multitask and explore one to one.
Just pick a lane, come on.
Nice. I laughed, I cried, what the fuck?
Oh my gosh, I've got a movie recommendation too. I was sick this past weekend, want to recommend, this is a foreign language film, it's a Danish film called Another Round. Have you heard about this?
No.
Came out a couple years ago. It stars Mads Mikkelsen of
yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. My recognition just kicked in. Keep describing it so other people's recognition can kick in.
Yeah. It's about these four teachers who are in a rut, and one of them it talks about this theory that is out there. This is fallacious. Nobody tried to do this, but that the human system operates at a blood alcohol level deficiency, and that the idea being that we are kind of more optimal socially and creatively at 0.05% or whatever blood alcohol.
For my ignorance, is that like super drunk or is that just like a tiny bit buzz? Like I have no point of reference.
It depends on your weight, but it's probably like a couple of beers, you know?
Okay.
Go ahead.
So one of my streamers did a contest of like guessing people's BAC recently. So I think 0.08 is the legal drinking limit, and then like 0.4 is like you're dead. So
right. Yeah, but like there have been people who have survived past like 0.3, 0.4, but it's extremely rare circumstances. But 0.08 is where you're considered too drunk to drive, and obviously different people have tolerances, etc. But like 0.05, you know, it's supposed to be like, let's just try this, and it's a bunch of these middle-aged guys, and it's a really good movie. It goes probably about as you would expect, but it is this really kind of heartwarming is the wrong word, but it's a very good depiction of, you know, kind of this friendship and trying to recover, you know, this kind of happiness or, you know, passion for living that, you know, maybe you lost for no particular reason, you know?
Mm-hmm. Joie de vivre or whatever.
Yeah. It's really well, really well performed and all of that. Yeah, I like it quite a bit. It's also funny because, you know, you watch it with subtitles. Danish, they gotta be kidding me with some of these words. like there's enough of it that is basically just, oh, that's the English word just said a little bit weird. You gotta be kidding me. It's not like loan words or anything. It's just like similar enough roots.
I don't speak English. I speak Danish with an accent, apparently.
Yeah.
I feel like the language is broken down into thirds, where it's like a third English words, a third German words, and then a third where it's like a Y is thrown in a random place or a K is thrown in a random place, and it's like, all right, I guess.
Yeah.
I can't identify that one.
Yeah.
Is Mads Mikkelsen Danish?
Yes. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Where had you heard about this before?
Just reading online. I saw a review for it when it came out, which also praised it.
Yeah. No, it came highly recommended and it lived up. Normally, recommendations are poison. But yeah, it's pretty good. And it's on Hulu too, so it's like super easy to watch.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I think that might have been what stopped me from watching it the first time. Is like, I can't stream it. Screw that.
Right. Yeah. Mm. So yeah, that's what I've got. I was sick and I watched a good movie.
All right, Dennis, what's your movie recommendation?
I was gonna say, can I round us out? I've got a movie recommendation for a movie that is playing in my house right now as we speak.
Okay.
Upstairs. So our family is going to be pirates for Halloween. And then we're going on a cruise, which will have a pirate night. So that like gets us out for the cruise. Mm-hmm. And so to start doing our research, we all watched Muppet Treasure Island.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is an excellent one. It is also a long one. And mommy and daddy did not think to look at the time before getting it started tonight. It was just made in that heyday where people didn't care how long movies were.
Yeah.
And it's still going.
100 minutes. That's a...
Just 100 minutes? No. It's longer than that.
That's what it says on Wikipedia, but I will I will defer.
I was going to say, I 100 minutes sounds rather normal.
Well, yeah, just 10 minutes longer than the usual 90.
You're watching it like on television or on cable or something where they're putting in ads every 5 minutes?
Maybe we just started it later than I thought. I don't know. Anyway, it's a great movie. Yeah. I really enjoyed watching it. All the little one-liners and jokes that I giggled endlessly about as a child came right back to me.
Yeah.
Well, excuse me.
And you get you get Tim Curry as Long John Silver.
Tim fantastic. Curry
plays your main villain. Come on.
And apparently he's on record as saying it was his favorite role.
Oh yeah.
Like Michael Caine with the Muppet Christmas Carol.
Yeah. No, I mean Tim Curry's basically a Muppet anyway. So
yes.
I say that as the ultimate compliment I could give to a performer. So.
Yes, no, he is fantastic in that role and generally. Mm-hmm. So before I came downstairs, we were all yucking it up. I was, flopping over on the boys going, "You're precious, you're beautiful, thank you."
That's good.
I'm sure those lions will be circulating our house for weeks to come, which makes me happy. Yeah. The Muppets, they are excellent. and I wish there were more movies like Muppet Treasure Island coming out with regularity.
Yeah. I love myself a Muppet, and I hope that I hope that your kids get into them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. We tried a long time ago, we tried to do like a Muppet Madness. We're like, oh, we'll watch one a month or something. And we made the mistake of going back too far to like the very first Muppet movie.
It's a little aimless. Yeah.
It's, if they didn't care about pacing, in Muppet Treasure Island, they certainly did not.
Muppets Take Manhattan is good. That one's fun.
Mm-hmm. Is that the caper? Which one is the caper?
Crime
drama.
There's a caper in it.
Yeah.
Great Muppet Caper. I think that's its own thing.
The Great Muppet Caper is its own thing. That's gotta be one of my favorites as well, but not paced to keep the attention of children. Muppet Treasure Island seems to be doing the trick though.
So, that's good. That's good.
But yeah, I mean, that is how much I love you guys is I left Muppet Treasure Island early.
And like specifically left the Muppets and your kids watching the Muppets.
Well, it was more like, child. more like to Jen, like sucks to be you. You got to do bedtime.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
Prancing downstairs. No. It's all good. But yeah, so we've all been watching good movies.
Nice. Well, this is not a movie show, unfortunately. This is a video game show.
Damn it!
Yes.
I mean, it can be whatever we want, but I think it'd be a good idea to talk about some video games generally, on a regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, I'm going to go to you first.
Sure, yeah. I've got two games that I've been playing this week, new and noteworthy, worth talking about. The first one is Ori and the Blind Forest.
Oh, yeah.
Metroidvania. Which is a platformer from, I think, the Xbox 360. That was kind of the you know, indie game darling of the Xbox 360.
It was like right on the line. I think it might have been Xbox One.
If it was one, yeah, that might be it as well. But you know, I saw that it was on Game Pass. I was like, you know, I've heard this is good and beautiful, and it is absolutely both of those things. So. Yeah. Haven't put too incredibly much time into it, but it's definitely got the Metroidvania feel, of, you know, going through areas and finding new, keys and abilities that act as keys, that, you know, that are as much about traversal as they are combat or anything else. You know, oftentimes they're purely about traversal, and that gives you access to new areas, and it's just that kind of beautiful loop. Feels really good, like kinetically in your hands. The platforming is pretty tight, but the thing that sets Ori and the Blind Forest apart is the kind of painterly art style throughout. And this is just an absolutely gorgeous game.
Yeah.
Every step of the way. Mm-hmm. They really lean, like the start is slow. There's a lot of storytelling. You spend a lot of time either in cutscenes or in you know, controlling your character in a level that is so simple that it might as well have been a cutscene.
Oh, man, but that's such a misstep.
Yeah, I can't get too mad about it because it is a very, we'll say it is a beginning worthy of Up by Pixar.
Oh.
Like, it's got that vibe to it.
Okay. Does it hit that hard, or is it in that same genre of devastating?
It is. I don't know if I could say anything hits as hard as the beginning of Up, but
right.
It definitely plays in the same ballpark.
Gotcha.
And you know, while I'm having my gut wrenched, I don't want to be doing super serious platforming. So I can forgive that slow start, because they use it to great effect. But things speed up quickly from there. And really, you do find yourself careening through these levels. So, you know, there's nothing that is pushing you to move faster. Like, there's no timer. And as of yet, I haven't encountered anything that I would really consider like a timed element. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to have good timing for some jumps, but it's not like you're racing the clock. But it just feels so good to move quickly that I find myself racing through levels anyway.
Yeah. My understanding is the difficulty ceiling in it gets pretty high. Like, it ends up being a bit of a challenge, not quite like Massacre kind of thing, but challenging enough that I've like seen it referenced in terms of kind of like alongside things like Hollow Knight or Cave Story, stuff like
that. Oh, wow. Very cool. Well, all the pieces that they're putting into place ability wise, totally foreshadow that.
Yeah. I know from personal experience, I stopped playing the game when I hit a boss that was too hard. And was like, well, I guess I'm done.
Later.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. Haven't gotten to that point yet, but I believe it's there. So I'll keep my eye out for it. It's so interesting because, like, you know, in a time when it's becoming more and more normal to allow you to adjust difficulty on the fly, it doesn't feel as possible to do that for a platformer.
Yeah, I mean, outside of like doing like a new Super Mario Brothers giving you the bubble kind of thing.
Yeah, I shrink the hitbox or the movement and the difficulty of the movement and consequently how cool you feel when you do the movement, right? It's so integral to the experience.
I mean,
that it's hard to reduce.
So like we say that, but then the game that I think exemplifies adjustable difficulty is a platformer, Celeste, right? If you just want to see that story, and a lot of people play that game and love it for its story, it does give you enough modifiers to have kind of infinite air dash, you know, more double jumps and things like that. Like, there are possibilities taking that into the realm of a platformer with combat. where somebody can just kind of like knock you down out of the air if they want to. I don't know how much that complicates it because I haven't thought about it very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I never even thought to go looking for difficulty modifiers in Celeste. That game is hard as nails.
Important to have those sorts of modifiers in a game like this, because if it's something like Dark Souls and you hit something that's like a wall of a boss, it's okay. You can go plenty of other places in the world. Mm-hmm. But like in a game like this, it's like you have to fight that boss. There's no other option since you're on like a track for where to go in the game. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and when it comes to like bosses and enemies, like you can reduce HP, you can give yourself more HP. Yeah. But when it comes to like you need to do this really precisely timed ballet to get up to a ledge, you know, that is, it feels like a bigger design change to adjust the difficulty. Unless, like you talk about, if your character's working with powers and you know, air dash, that sort of thing, like I could see that working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, Celeste, I believe, came out after this film, books and games. Celeste, 2018, and then Ori and the Blind Forest, like 2015, something like that. So I would be curious to see how much Celeste might have changed, by the time they get to Ori and the Will of the Wisp. But I have not, played either of the games, so I can't speak.
Yeah, this felt like a big blind spot. Just iconic, like I guess this filled the indie game slot for Xbox. This was like the validator of we have these, like I said, I can't overstate how beautiful the game is.
Mm-hmm.
So having a good time with it, and we'll see where that leads. That's Ori and the Blind Forest.
On Wikipedia, the game story was inspired by the Lion King and the Iron Giant.
Oh no.
Jesus.
I'll just make sure I play with a box of tissues next to me.
Don't play it in front of your children. They might perceive you as weak.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And there's lots of good reasons to cry. Sometimes you just feel very big emotions. So it's Pavlovian at this point. I just kick into the responses.
Oh, I cry for no reason. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Let's see here. So that's Ori and the Blind Forest. Any other questions or thoughts about that?
No, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I've heard nothing but good things.
Okay, sweet. The other game I've just kind of dipped my toe in is called Medieval Dynasty.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I played this. I streamed this for about an hour or two. Yeah.
Okay, just recently or when it first came out?
When it was still in early access, so probably like about a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think 2020 I remember seeing was when this game came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And man, it looks like generic McGeneric at first blush.
There's something really special there. I find myself like drawn to it, but I know it's going to be a coal hole. So
yes. So there's, you know, this is like Valheim but less cool is like the pitch that's on the surface of it, but there's actually a really cool idea underneath. So this is, it starts out as a survival game, I think Valheim is an excellent comparison to draw, except it's like Valheim with a 30% bonus in RPG. Mm-hmm. And maybe even BioWare RPG specifically. You know, there's a story that you are kind of fleeing war and trying to find a new home with your uncle. You know, the first thing you do is kind of find this village and find out that your uncle has actually died, but everyone like remembered him really favorably, and so they're amenable to helping you start a new life.
It should be said that this is specifically like realistic fantasy, at least the part that I played. Like you are basically like fleeing a war in Austria and going to Poland, I think is what it is. Yeah.
I will be very surprised if I fight a giant ghost deer like I did in Valheim.
Right.
Or if goblins start showing up.
Yeah, this aesthetic kind of looks like the game Deliverance, like Kingdom Come or something like that, where it's like kind of like old-fashioned Germany, like forest type aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's the vibe. And you know, after that kind of opening and series of dialogues, it kind of kicks you into survival game 101, right? Find enough rocks and sticks to make an axe so you can chop down a tree, so you can get logs to, you know, build something larger so that you can gather materials to, you know, and you just start up this chain that eventually leads to you building a home. And that's about where I am right now. The thing that really intrigued me about this game, when I started reading about it, cause I was like, seems kind of interesting, but like, I don't know.
Been done a lot.
What's worth it about this? So I started reading and I'm glad I did. Apparently where this game goes is that it gradually transitions from survival sim to village management game.
Mm-hmm. You can see the tabs. You can see all that. You can see all the delegation and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So when you talk about this being a coal hole, I believe you.
Yeah.
And the idea is that as you get more established and, first you just build your house, but then you build other buildings around you. And then as you do that, you attract people from nearby villages or randomly that you can recruit, for lack of a better term, and kind of employ or at least have live near you. And your focus in the game shifts from I need to go gather wood to leading this village, and making sure that you've got enough people to go gather wood, etc. So I don't know the full arc of where that goes, but I was like, that is a really cool transition. Off the top of my head, I couldn't think of any games that do something like that. Can you think of other games that start out
you manually do things, but then you set up things to automatically do it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like factory builders are kind of have that same sort of progression.
RimWorld has a little bit of that. I mean, it's that's more on the side of starts out as a colony sim, but you're giving the orders and trying to build something that can sustain more people so you can do more impressive projects and have an easier time surviving. Yeah. You quickly get into the second you throw management and stuff in there and automation, you start getting into Dwarf Fortress likes.
Yes. And this seems to really lean into the story side of things, which also might be a way it differentiates itself. Your initial little quest line has you just sitting and talking with people and, one guy's reminiscing about the war days with your uncle that you were trying to find, and another person needs help to pay a debt that they got themselves into, and there's a lot of care, it feels like, put into the characters and dialogue. It's easy to do that with the starting area to make a good first impression. We'll see how well that carries through, especially when the game kind of touts itself as this vast world that you can explore. But I really, while we're tying into every conceivable game genre out there, I got kind of Skyrim vibes.
Yeah.
We're just like everyone had a little something interesting going on, color me intrigued.
At least the initial region seems pretty big. I don't know if there's other stuff, but I can totally see once you have your home base set up, venturing out and establishing trading relationships with other towns and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, totally. Cool. Well, and that's interesting. Oh, go ahead.
Did you play this post-release, or did you stop while it was in early access?
No, the last time I touched this, I downloaded it on the Steam Deck. It is not verified for Steam Deck, but it is playable. And I just wanted to have a little project to try and get it configured so it would play on Steam Deck. Mm-hmm. Nice. Just to see if I could.
Yeah, it's funny. So this is a very chill experience. Even though there's the survival, you have your thirst meter and your hunger meter. I have never felt truly threatened by that. I had to make sure I ran over to the stream and took a drink every once in a while, but it really felt like the game was not trying to put the screws to you at all. Yeah. I appreciate that.
I remember having a close call with some of the animals I tried to hunt. Like if it was a boar or something, it got pretty pissed off that I was trying to kill it, but
real reactionary.
I started with rabbits. They just ran.
Yeah.
That was good. I went looking for badger. The map said there were badgers around, and I was not able to find a badger.
Oh, a badger will ruin you. Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably for the best. I haven't had any trouble with the wildlife, but again, that's kind of the box quote kind of stuff is like, oh yeah, you're gonna have to deal with bears eventually and stuff. So, this world does have some teeth to it, but from everything I read and everything I've experienced so far, it kind of lets you go and find those teeth rather than trying to gnaw on you.
Nice.
The one complaint isn't the right thing to say I had or thought I had is, it did pretty good of giving you kind of a quest tracking system. And, you know, in this village, there's several people to talk to. You fill up your quest log relatively quickly. But there's kind of a main quest that is just to-dos to get you introduced to the world. Mm-hmm. So it starts with, like, gather some supplies. Then it starts from – then it goes to, you know, craft some tools. Then it goes to, you know, gather supplies of those tools and yada, yada. And that, it kind of eases you into the gameplay. But it is day-dependent. And so, you know, if you finish whatever quest it has met out for that day, you know, with half the day to go, it's kind of like, well, I guess I'll just fuck around or go to sleep at noon and wake up at 7 the next morning. Like,
yeah,
I wish that it would just auto progress you to the next thing and kind of let you decide when you want to stop pushing for the day.
Right.
And I understand there might be some like seasonal stuff to the game where like, you know, the seasons will change over time.
I've seen screenshots of the show Winter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember seeing like it's 3 days to a season, something like that. Oh, talk about adjustability, especially for difficulty. This thing has a whole menu of adjustments you can make to like encumbrance. At what point do you get encumbered? How much stamina do you have? How much damage do you take? Like, it really lets you get into the guts of this thing with how hard you want to make it on yourself.
I mean, like, another differentiator, but something that I think makes that possible. I think they have a lot of kind of latitude for stuff like that, specifically because this is single player. At least what I saw, you know, this is not like a Rust where, you know, or a Valheim where you're going to like get on a server with some friends and kind of be sharing the same space.
Yeah, single player is the only take on it that I can see.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I appreciate that. I would love to be able to kind of bash through the introductory quests a little faster. Oh, the point I was going to make is I think 3 days makes a season, but you can also adjust a slider for, like, how long your seasons are.
Yeah.
So I wonder if I've just hit the point in the quest line where it's like, we need it to go to winter so we can actually show you some new stuff. I don't know. But yeah, so I, you know, have just derped around with it a little bit, and I, you know, it starts you in first person perspective, but you can switch between the two, and it just feels much more comfortable in third person.
Oh, okay.
Which might just be because it's more Valheim-ish.
Oh, I didn't realize Valheim was third person.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, indeedy.
Shows you how much I have seen videos of that play.
You gotta show off your badass Norse armor, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. I just figured it was for other people, you know.
Fair enough. But yeah, that's Medieval Dynasty. I look forward to getting to the point where I'm raising my son in the game and in real life, and can compare and contrast and play the two against each other.
Both at the same time. So,
I do have a question about this because it's on sale right now on Steam. Like, if you were to put a dollar value on this game, what would you say it would be worth?
Purchase? Oh, no.
Question for both of you guys, I guess, since you guys both have played it.
Yeah, I mean, it's included with Game Pass, so $15 a month, and whatever portion of that goes towards specifically playing this game.
I think I paid like $20 for it, and for the amount of game that I saw there, $20 felt just fine.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably good. I would say, like, you know, jump at it if you see it for $15, yeah. And $20 you won't regret. But again, I have certainly not tested the edges of how much time you can spend on the game.
Yeah.
What I've heard is that it is very comfortable revealing its systems slowly, and so to like truly get into the village management stuff and everything is many, many hours in.
Yeah.
So I think it's a game that kind of reveals itself over time. So that would make me think that there is, you know, a lot there for the money. But it could also just be that there's not much there. They just reveal it very, very slowly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. Well, I'm happy to hear a second opinion about that.
Yeah. And that's me this week.
Cool. Ben, how about you?
I only got two small ones this week. I have Domekeeper I've continued playing,
cool.
Which I talked about before. I think the only thing that I've done since the last time I talked about it is I've beaten the Relic Hunter mode on all the map sizes. So there's like a gigantic map size that is really, really big, but eventually you can crack that. It's not as long as I thought it would be. Like, that's maybe like an hour session or so. I thought it would take longer than it did, but that's fine. And then on the other side of things, they have a legacy mode for the game, which is where it's just like an endless mode, essentially. So basically, you go until you either die or you launch off in a rocket ship and say, like, all right, that's enough resources to collect for the game. Mm-hmm. And if you leave, you like times two the amount of resources you have. So that's kind of like the push your luck sort of thing. Where it's like you kind of need to fight the right time to dust off so that you don't like lose all your potential winnings. Mm-hmm. Not much more to say about it, I guess. I unlocked like new skin and they added pets to the game. They still haven't unlocked. There's a second hero mode coming, but that hasn't been pushed yet. So even though this is a like release game, there are like features that are going to be added later. So that's kind of like in a weird state, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's other modes I could try, but I just haven't really felt like trying them. As far as like, there's a secondary weapon where it's like a sword on a string that you can shoot out. I played that a few times in the beginning, but I haven't really like stuck with it or tried to like master that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say about the game is like, it becomes pretty clear the order of like what's the best like upgrade to have. I think I mentioned this before, where there's like artifacts you can dig up and it'll give you like these like buildings in your base that'll have some sort of function, where it'll be like an elevator to transport resources up, or a like a bomb making kit where you can just like drop bombs in the cave or something like that. So it becomes pretty obvious like which ones are worth your time and which ones are like not worth anything at all. For instance, there's one called like Drillbert, which is like this dinosaur that you can like drop them off somewhere in the cave and they'll dig until they hit a hard substance and they'll stop.
Oh, that's
pretty, it's cute, but it's pretty worthless like functionally if you're trying to like be sweaty about the game. So like those, you just like, if that's like your only option, you just grind it up for resources instead. So that's one thing that's like maybe a little bit disappointing, or that needs some like some nerfs or buffs, is making sure that the ones that aren't used as much maybe get a little bit more incentivized, and the ones that are being used all the time maybe debuff somehow, or somehow make it so you don't have to use that every time, because that part feels a little bit flat. And that could just be me like just finding my trenches and just always going with that. But
yeah,
I don't know. The game's still fun. It's fun to do like a run every once in a while, but I am feeling like I've seen most of what the game has to offer at this point, which is a little bit disappointing because it's only, I don't think I've spent that many hours in the game. It's like, you're like 10 or 15. Mm-hmm. So, but I don't know. So I'm not sure how long the legs are of this game is, I guess what I'm trying to say, but yeah.
Man, that's a little disappointing that there's just an obvious like correct way to go. And that it's not doing something to like incentivize making kind of more specialized builds for a run, for lack of a better word, right?
Yeah. Yeah. There definitely needs to be a way to somehow make those sorts of things useful. Like, there's not enough, you know, like with things like, you know, Magic the Gathering or other like things where it's very like combo based things, you can get situations where cards that are most of the times weak can be really strong in the right configurations. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that they have here never really have that sort of ability where it's like this thing, like there's no setting where this thing can be like really, really awesome. So it's kind of lacking that sort of like, kind of like surprise synergy element, where certain things can be really valuable. That said, like, you know, times where I've gotten like an early elevator is like okay, depending upon how you spec it. There's been times where I've gotten that early on and I've tried to build around it. So it's like I don't upgrade like my carrying speed at all, and I just focus on my speed and digging. And then that way, because I know I can just carry resources to the elevator, instead try and upgrade that. And like that's fun to do sometimes to try and like have that variable gameplay. But even like given that circumstance, I'm probably better off just like grinding up the elevator for resources and doing the normal upgrade path that I normally do. Right. So there needs to be like some sort of rebalancing to make those sorts of things more useful, I think.
Yeah. It's still a really new game too. So there's could be both new content and also those kind of sensible adjustments coming down the line too.
True. And like, I haven't really mastered the game or anything because I'm still playing on like the normal difficulty. So there's like two more higher difficulties to go if I really wanted to like kind of like try and do peak performance at this game. Mm-hmm. But I think I'll probably just chill out on the game for a while. And if they add new content in the future, I'll probably come back and check it out.
That sounds sensible.
Yeah. So I think that's all I have to say about that game this week. I have one other game that I've played this week, and I've only dipped my toe in a little bit, to borrow from Dennis. But I got the DLC for Outer Wilds. Got to make sure it's the right game name.
Yeah. Outer Wilds. Outer Wilds. The was it Echoes of the Eye? I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this one's like a weird situation because I got it on PS4 originally, but what's nice is it you get it's like a free upgrade to PS5, which they seem to do that with a lot of games. So that's sweet. Because I think, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, when I was playing Miles Morales, I accidentally got the PS4 version of it, but it's a free upgrade to PS5. So it's like, oh, sweet. Well, that saves me money from buying it that one on the store. So cool. I'll say the same thing that I've heard about this DLC, which is it is kind of a fun and surprising way that of how you find the DLC. So I won't talk about that because I don't want to ruin that for anybody if they want to do that. But the DLC is well integrated into the regular game itself.
Okay.
So to get to it, you can just fire up a regular vanilla Outer Wilds game and it's clear enough like how it's added, so you won't really miss it or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was well executed, and it's exciting, like getting to the new content or like the way it's presented or whatever is done really well. So So I've just gotten to basically see like kind of the new area and I'm exploring it, but I haven't done much beyond that. So
yeah.
That is still more to do. One thing I liked about it, when you fire it up, it gives you an option. It says, hey, there's parts of this that are kind of like scary. If it becomes too overwhelming for you, there's like an option to like turn off monsters in this. It's like, that's nice.
Yeah.
I don't want to be surprised and scared by anglerfish in this game. So.
Oh, man. I wonder if they backported that option into the... into the base game. That can get kind of gnarly.
The only part that sucks about that is like that was the one this is like a me problem, is not understanding the mechanic of how to get past them. So just like over and over getting like eaten by them was like very frustrating and annoying, and like
And getting to that planet's kind of a bummer as well.
But I'm happy there's new content there. I've heard that it's a pretty sizable DLC, and that
it's like an expansion, is what I understand. Like it is its own kind of story.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard I've heard that it's comparable in size. Like it's maybe like half the length to the length of the regular game. Like that as far as that sizable. So we'll see. Yeah.
I love the Outer Wilds.
Yeah,
it's a good game.
That is a game where it's like you wish you could go back and play it for the first time again. It's very fun to watch other people play the game, and then at the same time it is a game that I fully recognize I have so much more fondness looking back on it than when I played it, because it has such a sticking mechanism of like when you fail you're like, shit, I have to do that 20 minutes over again, and that definitely piles on frustration, but you forget all about that, you know, a year or two later, and you're just like, man, that was really good.
So yeah, no, all of that kind of burns away, man. Yeah. I want a chat or forum program that takes the way that the main civilization writes in the Outer Wilds, you know, like the spirals that kind of like curve off of each other, and they're like nested conversations in that, because that is exactly how my mind works. I love that. Yeah.
Is it like the language in Arrival then? Maybe it sounds like a little bit.
I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
But I really like the way that those conversations are represented in the Outer Wilds. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. 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 Anyway, I'm happy to be back in that world, at least for now. Mm-hmm. So.
No, I played the two games back to back that I wish I could just experience over again for the first time: Return of the Obra Dinn and Outer Wilds. Both of those would be just wonderful to go into tabula rasa, you know?
Yeah.
Hmm. Nice. Well, I definitely let me know how you enjoy it, because I mean, I've heard again, kind of like Ori, I've heard nothing but good things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. We'll see.
Neat. I'm going to disappoint you guys. Most of what I've done has been assignment play, and my game time has been taken up by doing Rocksmith and just generally practicing guitar.
Ooh,
that sounds nice.
Yeah. No disappointment in there.
Yeah.
No. So just trying to get in, since I kind of picked back up again here, trying to get in about an hour per day of playing and, you know, trying to learn stuff. And something that I kind of have noticed and have grown to appreciate, kind of dipping back into it, and especially having tried out a bunch more custom DLC, right? So Rocksmith has songs that ship on the disc, quote unquote on the disc. There are official DLCs that you can buy, all of which are made by Ubisoft, by the internal team there. But there is a whole community and a whole website database full of fan created charts for songs, where you download, it has the song in it, and you can just go in and select the song as if it were just part of the game, and get in there and play it. And something that I've really noticed and kind of grown to appreciate is, you know, obviously when it's community made, some of the charts are going to be really bad. And there are some charts that do not take dynamic difficulty into account. Dennis, you know how Rocksmith works, but you start out, depending on the sight reading level that you put in, you start out at a pretty basic level of the song, right? So instead of playing the whole chord, maybe it has you going up and down like the roots, you know, and then like, oh, here's the root and the third or the fifth, if you're doing, and then it just kind of adds in there until ultimately you work your way up there. And even the charts that do have dynamic difficulty on them, not all of them are designed as well to like walk you up the difficulty curve sensibly. So what I've done, and kind of, you know, recognizing that, and just noticing that the official Ubisoft authored ones have generally been a smoother learning experience, I've actually just kind of gone in and done something that felt pretty useless before, which is sorting the tracks by difficulty, you know, how can you like rate the difficulty of like an individual song? Like what's the criteria there? And like songs that I've had no interest in before, never played before, because I like playing music that I know, you know, just never, you know, never fired it up. Just going in and saying, all right, I'm going to just work up the difficulty, and I'm going to kind of see where I find my level of, you know, frustration at. And it's been around like the middle, right? Where like the basic version of the song has been, it has been just a little bit too much for me. You know, I'm hitting about like 70% as opposed to my usual like 85 or 90. Right. And then gone in and started doing like the riff repeater. I'm kind of engaging with the product as it is designed, and as opposed to having
it in the most boring way possible.
What?
I'm engaging with the product as designed.
Well, no, because I was, I figured that like, oh, I kind of know the basics on this. Like, I just want to use play songs that I'm sounding defensive. I primarily used Rocksmith as something to let me play songs that I knew, you know, knew and enjoyed. And I stuck to those as opposed to just kind of like letting it take me on the journey up towards more complicated kind of things. And ultimately what that kind of like leads to is some of the music that I listen to, you know, it's not that I listen to especially great music, but just it's more difficult than my ability is up to playing at like a real kind of thing. And just like there's been a certain amount of frustration, like I just demand, this is really making me like skip strings in a way that I'm not really used to, and just saying that, like there's been some frustration there, and I'm kind of seeing and appreciating the like the actual design that has gone into smoothing out that difficulty slope on the official stuff. And it's kind of made me admire Rocksmith as a teaching tool, but also as a game, because a difficulty curve is totally a thing that games have, you know. And it's kind of given me this new respect for like the product that they shipped and, you know, out of the box. Right.
Have you warmed up to any of the songs then that you don't typically play or listen to?
I mean, yeah, there have been ones that I've been marking to come back to because I don't know the songs or the bands. It's hard for me to say, like, oh, yeah, this one. It's just a bunch of, like, because I don't know about you guys. I kind of tapped out of learning about a lot of new music after about 2010 or so.
Pull the gates up on the castle. Like, I'm good.
So I've got my, like, 2000s Canadian indie rock, and I've got, like, my hard rock from a little bit before that. And, mm-hmm. Obviously, like, any classic rock that got grandfathered in on the Rock Band and Guitar Hero. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. no, that's just kind of the stuff that I have. So it's there's stuff that came out after that that is just like I do not know this band from Adam. I've got no clue here. But like there's stuff that like, oh, I dig the sound and I want to go back to it and work out how to play it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know, it's weird because talking about that kind of feels like talking about Mario teaches piano or something like that.
It's like a hobby, but that's, it counts.
Yeah. Uh-huh. It happens on a screen. You're good.
It's digital. It counts.
Yeah. I mean, enjoying good game design, is enjoying good game design wherever it happens.
Yes.
And this is why we kind of try and work in board game references.
Board games feel entirely germane to what we talk about. Yeah.
Right. But, it is cool to see like a concrete example of how specifically just something unique to the video game medium, which is this kind of difficulty ramp, makes an experience of something that feels kind of adjacent or like you said, teaches typing or whatever, makes it better.
Yeah. And I've never had something outside of me teach me how to play a song so outside of having played Rocksmith for a while now, I've not had a non-video game thing like try and teach me skills. Everything has been, well, I'm going to look up the chords or I'm going to look up a tab mm-hmm. where it's available and I'm just going to, sit down until I figure it out. And I still do that because not every song is available in there. And honestly, there are just some kinds of songs that you just don't want to play to the track or, on something that is going to score you. Rocksmith 2014 is very, very bad with rhythm guitar stuff, specifically chords. Like it treats those like forbidden knowledge. that you shall not have, which to me is entirely opposite because you sit down and you learn the campfire chords and then you start working up the neck and learning scales and things like that. Mm-hmm. That to me makes sense. And Rocksmith, it is entirely opposite. And you can tell why, just because like, yes, rhythm guitar happens on a rhythm, but like there are certain songs where there's like some jangle, there's some looseness to it, mm-hmm. So if I'm going to try and play anything that, is going to be kind of more to my strength, which is those chords, for example, right? A song that everybody knows, but like I downloaded a custom DLC version of Pink Floyd's Wish You Were Here, right? Mm-hmm. You just easy enough song and, couple of fun little solos there, but that's just kind of something that you like play to strum along and do a couple of like hammer-ons in the G chord and the, sing, right? It's not fun playing that along to the game because it's telling you you missed stuff. And it's like, no, I hit that. That was me. Don't judge me. Gets you in your head. Whereas I can just sit down and play that song, on any other guitar. So not everything is appropriate for it. And finding that distinction has been satisfying and spending more of my practice time away from the game and just sitting there on my amp has been good.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's inherently impossible to quantize something that's so about feel.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine like I am nowhere near being able to karaoke at any level, but I imagine playing karaoke games has to feel a little bit the same.
Yeah. No, it's just like, no, it's... You get real rigid stuff, and that was a problem with mm-hmm. vocals in Rock Band as well.
It sounded right. I don't care if it was on key or not.
Good.
I was gonna say, Cole, I'm not disappointed about you playing Rocksmith. I am disappointed that you didn't learn Through the Fire and Flames on Trombone Bone Hero since I texted you about it yesterday.
Yeah, I saw the text about that. Wow. I had no idea that people could put custom songs in Trombone Champ or try and chart along to it. Mm-hmm. That is a revelation.
all the dudes.
So many dudes. I like, and it, like a lot of, so Through the Fire and the Flame gets a lot of, you know it's the meme hard, so it is the meme difficult song because of Guitar Hero and because specifically of that video, right? Like it feels like that song got really popular around the time YouTube came out, because like, oh, look at these two guys doing wild tapping stuff on their guitar. It's, you know, it's crazy. A lot of that song is just intermittent power chords as the guy sings. So taking the trombone and doing the vocal line along with that is a very smart idea. Yeah, it's just good. If it's the trombone.
Through the Fire and Dutes.
Oh man, music is fun, you guys.
Yeah, it is.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, we're keeping it simple this week. So, you know, sometimes less is more. What games use simplicity or minimalism to great effect?
Yeah, I'll get started here with Greg, who says, I have to go with Tetris. Simple to play, hard to master, can run on a fridge, and still popular over 35 years later. Side note, anyone who doesn't know the whole sordid tale of how Tetris came to the West should look it up. It's totally fucked up. We talked about it extensively on the WAF about Tetris. We did like the whole history of the deals and
What's the TLDR on that?
Yeah.
Basically, TLDR, Pajitnov designed the game while he was working at some ministry in the USSR. And because of that, it was technically property of the state over there.
Oh.
But he was distributing it to friends, and it like crossed the Iron Curtain, like in Romania or something like that, and it started being cloned everywhere, and that got him to convince the USSR to, you know, license it out, saying like, hey, this is going to be a great way to, you know, win money, or you know, to get money, people like this, it can be a cultural export, etc. But because it had broken containment, there was an awful lot of you know, just like, how do we do a deal on something that is basically everywhere being made being made unlicensed.
So the same thing that all free-to-play games are dealing with today.
I mean, kind of, but with like high international intrigue. Like the deal ran afoul, or it involved like the Maxwell family in England, you know, whose patriarch was definitely murdered on a boat by a spy. You know, not related to Tetris, but just like that's kind of the way it was going. Maxwell's, that's where Ghislaine Maxwell, that's her family. Epstein's second in command. Sorted anyway. But then you get like Nintendo coming in and making the deal, just like sending a newbie like to this meeting in Japan to try and secure Tetris for the Game Boy, knowing like, oh yeah, this is going to be a really good game to, you know, ship packed in, and that deal ultimately being kind of like what made it, you know, sink in the West specifically, just the, you know, that association selling a ton of Game Boys, and the Game Boy selling a ton of Tetris. So maybe you don't have to listen to the Watch Out for Fireballs, because I just kind of gave you the broad strokes.
I think you still listen to it.
Yeah. But Greg, you know, lays this out. Tetris is a perfect game because there's nothing you could take away from it without compromising it. You know, like they've added stuff, you know, different ways of scoring, piece holds, rotation lock kind of stuff. But the basic Tetris that you get on the NES or the Game Boy or on the Macintosh. Yeah, no, even that still is recognizable and functions. Mm-hmm. Kind of the example. Ben, what does Chris say?
Chris says, back when people played mobile games, Desert Fucking Golf. Probably the most minimal game I've played aside from text games, yet as addicting as any actual major game with realistic graphics.
This is an incredibly good answer. I love and have sunk so much time into Desert Golfing.
This is going to be a stupid question. That game is procedurally generated, right?
I don't know. There are parts of it that feel procedurally generated, but there are definitely certain holes that, especially earlier on, there are certain holes that people seem to share in common. There are some landmarks that you find. I think after a couple hundred screens, you find
a cactus. I think it's all from the same seed. So it's not randomly generated, but it is procedurally generated.
Oh, it has to be procedurally generated. There are thousands. Yeah.
It just goes and goes and goes.
Yeah. Okay. Desert Gulf. Unless I can think of a better one, that might end up being my answer.
It's a pretty good answer.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
Jeremy says SteamWorld Dig. Dig mineral to sell them and upgrade your gear, and dig some more. Yet a very charming game with almost no story.
SteamWorld Dig is really good.
Mm-hmm. Distilled Minecraft loop.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Really satisfying. The truth of this is revealed when you look at SteamWorld Dig 2, which I think is a phenomenal game, but it functions very differently than SteamWorld Dig does by being a Metroidvania. That just means that both of the games are good in their own different way.
Yeah, SteamWorld Dig reminded me of, like, if SteamWorld Dig is the streamlined Minecraft, Super Motherload is the streamlined SteamWorld Dig, which was like a flash game, a browser game from God when I was in high school, I think.
I would be really surprised if SteamWorld Dig wasn't referencing that in some way.
Oh, I'm sure. But yeah, it's one of those games that showed up on all the addictinggames.com and whatever. Mm-hmm. Nostalgia. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing how many like lightning in bottles there were from those sorts of games, because it's like thousands of games and like, you know, a dozen of them are like really, really well designed, like almost accidentally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. That was you, Dennis. So I'll read this. Austin says, Amnesia: The Dark Descent, an almost empty world with minimal mechanics. Yet those are what gives it the ability to make you poop your pants while gaming with your girlfriend. I wouldn't recommend doing that. I think that
oddly specific.
Yeah, little bit too specific to be made up. So
just know your kinks before you make a decision on that. And speaking of that, Rookie says,
yeah. Hey Ben, what's Rookie say?
Rookie says, don't shit your pants. The simplest premise for a game I've ever played, and it was game of the year contender for me. The joy/time spent ratio for this was off the charts. This may be because I am also a simple man.
Don't shit your pants is amazing. It's kind of weird that that team went on to make Rogue Legacy. But
I did not know that.
Find and play Don't Shit Your Pants.
I think I'm mostly surprised that it was a team that made Don't Shit Your Pants and not a single person.
That means there had to be meetings about it.
It might have been just the lead designer. I'm not sure, but like figuring out all the different ways to make Don't Shit Your Pants go wrong, and the way that it's kind of get like the your example is like you can buy yourself some time by typing fart. However, yeah. if you just type fart, oops, guess what? Some snuck out. You have to type fart gently. Yeah. buy yourself time. Just so many little things like that. I don't want to spoil anymore, but
I think something that's perfect about a game like that is as you're designing it, you just see what the players try out, and you're like, all right, we're gonna add something for that. We're gonna add something for that. We're gonna add something for that.
Yep.
That is a nice design feedback loop.
Because desert golfing is a really good one, I'm gonna go back even further and say Scorched Earth. Did either have any of you played Scorched Earth?
No, at least not by recognition.
Yeah, old game for the for DOS or for Windows. I played it on like Windows 3.1. This is kind of the precursor to Worms. It's an artillery game where you're a little tank, and you are making you're setting the angle and strength of your shots in order to try and hit other tanks that may be trying to hit you. This has the added benefit of having some terrain deforming kind of deal to it. There's like a few things you have to take into account. Like sometimes there's wind, sometimes there's not. Just as a very, very basic version of Worms. But also like having the designing the parabolic path of what you're trying to of your shot there, is just a really basic, atomic, and satisfying thing that a lot of other games have hooked into.
Yeah. I remember, I didn't play that one exactly, but I remember playing that game in high school with friends in computer typing class.
It was a popular one on, I believe it was on some, there was a version of it on TI-83 as well. Yeah, maybe not with terrain deformation, but yeah.
Oh my God, I remember someone in my class having that game and trying to, you know, we had one of those teachers that would like knock the batteries out of your TI-83, delete games if they found out you had it on it. And then arguing that it was, you know, it's graphing. It's a graphing game.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
And I think they won that argument.
That means the teacher was just giving up that day.
Fuck it. Yeah. I mean, just speaking of graphing calculator stuff, fucking drug war, man. I loved playing drug war.
Yeah.
Doing doing drug arbitrage. Yeah.
I remember the other two that come to mind are there's Blockman, which was like a puzzle game where you picked up blocks, and then there's like Phoenix something, which was like an old game. It was like Space Invader type game, but you could like it had a good RPG like upgrade system where you could upgrade like your missiles and stuff.
Man, just the way that those spread virally from person to person based on who had the cable to send them. Yeah, love that shit.
Yeah. Very Ben, how retro about, now.
Ben, how about you?
This is an answer I give all the time, but I'm going to say The Witness for this one with respect to the art style. Because the game, basically, the iteration that the art style took is they just tried to make it simpler and simpler graphics, and but to still evoke whatever emotion they wanted. Examples like a stone wall, just making it less and less poly, and but still being able to give off the feel that they wanted it to.
Yeah.
Just for mainly the effect that to simplify the information that you're presented with, so you can kind of clearly see where puzzles are and where points of interest are. I thought it did that well. So
It's minimalist, not because someone spent less time on it, but as a result of additional care put in.
Polish, you know, getting the, getting the jagged edges off of it. Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, mine, will be forever Minecraft. Or excuse me, not Minecraft. Good God. Minesweeper.
Okay. I could go along for it.
Yeah.
I could, could go on the
Minecraft.
Along on the ride for others.
Sorry. Minesweeper. So yeah, that, you know, being baked onto every early computer certainly helped you get acquainted with it, but just a grid, man, a grid and some numbers. And you know, it's, I found Minecraft well before I ever found like Sudoku or anything like that. And that just is the, you know, it's one of those games that has the Tetris effect where you just start seeing the world in this and shapes and, corners and everything start taking on a Minesweeper, oeuvre. So yeah, absolutely Minesweeper for me.
Nice.
And I, you know, the only thing that's ever been meaningfully added to that is just to make the grid bigger. You know, like there's nothing you can add to make that game a better version of itself.
Well, you also make it so that the first one, it, make it so it generates based on the first tile that you press.
Yeah, that is an elegant choice.
I think that's a that's a good affordance as opposed to generating it and giving you the possibility of losing on the first move. Nobody likes that.
And I do love how like all these things were tech demos for Windows where it's like teach people how to right click and left click on a mouse. Whoops, we created a great game.
Well, let's roll with it, I suppose.
Back in my days, you could stumble ass backwards into a great game.
I mean, when you were inventing games, yes. Yes, you could. Yeah, so thank you, Dennis, for putting that up. Thank you, everybody, for writing in. Good responses all. If you would like to participate in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, like the page, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things in the world of video games, often that are exciting to us. I've got one.
Go for it.
Facebook. I'm never going to call them Meta. Facebook had their big VR conference, I believe, today. And the thing that came out of that that I thought was interesting slash cool is that Among Us is coming to VR on November the 10th. And that seems like it's going to be really interesting to me, because like the overhead perspective makes like that is an important part of that game, you know? Like you can't see around corners and stuff. Like there's the field of view kind of deal, but like, I don't know. There's something about the paranoia of being up against something and doing the little task and not knowing that somebody is walking up behind you.
Yeah.
I'm very curious about how that's going to work. So it's going to be on Steam, but also on the Quest as well.
So it's like a completely different implementation of the game. It's like 3D now.
Yes. But, yeah.
Okay. And it's like the same levels, but just done in 3D, or
what new levels? What they demonstrated is like the basic first ship that you're on. Okay. I can't remember the name of it, but I don't know if there are going to be more or not. I would be curious/interested to see if they are going to design any environments specifically for VR, because obviously. Mm-hmm. Point of view offers different possibilities, you know?
Yeah, but, well, and the mini games at the very least feel like a requirement.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm curious about it. I'm probably going to check it out, but yeah, I'm curious just to see how paranoia inducing it is, more so than, you know, it already is.
I do feel like they're missing the deadline by a month and like missing out on like the Halloween gaming month, but
yes. Yeah.
Because I'm ready to play some Phasmophobia right now.
Ben, what disappointed us all this past Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna. We can talk about it. We don't have to have the hot take of like this sucks.
No,
everything sucks.
No, that's yeah. But,
yeah, I want to talk about the Mario trailer that was released this past week. So it's the trailer for the movie that's coming out. I think they also released like the poster the day before. But the big internet controversy over it was like Chris Pratt's voice in it and how it kind of sounds dumb and not like any Mario before as much. Mm-hmm. So mainly I just wanted to talk about the controversy of that. I think the article I posted was something like voicing Mario is an impossible task or something like that. So they had a hot take in that direction.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, so I didn't want to talk about the article necessarily. I just wanted to get your guys' opinions about it and kind of like want to hear your guys' takes about like, how could you do a Mario movie if you needed to? And like, are they doing the right thing here? Are they messing up genuinely?
So, yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
On that one trailer, I'm really angry that all the conversation has been on the two lines of dialogue and not on how fucking gorgeous this
it
movie
is,
looks
like, it is very pretty. Yeah.
Aside from Mario getting Chris Prattified from the trailer, like they've done everything right.
Yeah.
The world, the way everything animates, the way everything moves, every other actor in their character mm-hmm. is killing it.
Yeah.
They couldn't not have Mario speak in this first trailer, but I feel really bad that so much else is getting nailed.
Right.
And Mario's voice, has detracted from it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't think there's enough in there to really say, because I'm sure those two lines were focus grouped into the ground and there's no way it didn't come across as bland and generic just because it had to have all its edges filed off. We'll see if the performance is the same.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everything else looks amazing.
Mm-hmm. I think that every other actor did a really good job. You know, Jack Black is a very good choice for Bowser. Keegan-Michael Key as Toad is very good. like that works for me. I side with Tara Strong on this one, voice actress Tara Strong, who you know is good friends with Charles Martinet, the regular voice of the previous voice of Mario, saying like, yeah, this is actually something that is really a problem for voice actors, which is these large marquee roles are going only to celebrities as opposed to like people who have a lot of experience in the industry. And mm-hmm. basically Charles Martinet is like an actual ass voice actor. He's not just, that's not how he talks all the time in the whole.
What?
Yeah. Like I think that he could have made it so it wasn't just listening to, you know, the N64 Mario do the Mamma Mia, you know, kind of deal. I think that he could have brought the nuance to it because he's a professional and has done a ton of other stuff.
Yeah, like he was delivering what he was asked to, or what the medium demanded with all the. Yeah. The one-liners, like it says nothing about his capability to do
it. Yeah, but also it's not who's the best fit for the role, it's who's gonna sell the most tickets, and Chris Pratt is bankable and people know and like question mark him, you know, just like you say, oh yeah, here's Chris Pratt. And yeah,
not if you're on the internet,
right, but also this movie isn't made for us, it's being made for children,
it's being made for money.
Yes, it is being made for money. It's an investment. if people want to hear more of my thoughts on this, Gary and I did like a little like impressions kind of thing for on Patreon for for the trailer, where we were, you know, clowning on it. It feels like a missed opportunity.
Well, and if I remember, Tara had something really eloquent to say along the lines of, like, it has nothing to do with Chris Pratt. Like, you know, he could be completely capable. It's about doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, just like the man deserves to be in the role for the feature length movie.
Yeah.
And if you've watched anything that features him talking about his role or whatever, like, there is not a kinder, more genuine person in the world of video game voice acting.
Yeah,
it's just the man has earned it.
Who are we talking about?
Charles Martinet.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
I think like my take on this is like just the decision of making these actors the characters kind of speaks to the intention of the movie, where it's like, we're going to make a movie that's going to make a lot of money. And like, we're going to make all these kind of conservative, like, decisions that are similar to other bankable, like, blockbusters of the past 5 years, and just kind of follow in step with that. And so the part that disappoints me about that is it's like Mario Odyssey, for example, it's like they made so many confident decisions that were original and unique to them, that were not copying other things. And they did like an amazing job with it. And so it's like, I would rather them be making a movie with the same sort of intention, where it's like, we're making a movie because we want to do something like new and original and creative. And like, that's why we're putting out this product. And if they were doing something like that, and it followed the same kind of ethos as like the N64 or Odyssey or whatever, like they would have like a silent protagonist similar to like Zelda and stuff like that. Not saying that Mario should be like silent all the time, but it's like, usually the story is happening outside of Mario.
He should be pre-verbal.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like most of the time when they make stories, like, you know, it's usually the story's happening outside of Mario and he's just there, similar to like a Gordon Freeman character, to observe it and then do stuff, you know what I mean? Which, I mean, it's like, you don't have to necessarily follow that formula, but it definitely seems like they're not going in that sort of direction, and they're going in a direction of, we're going to make a bankable movie and be done with it. So,
I mean, the last time they tried to make a Mario movie, they ended up making a very cool film that people rejected because it was too different. Like, it's not
Bob Hoskins or
That movie is, I mean, it's not good, but it's worth watching.
Like, it's interesting. It's definitely a vision.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that disqualifies me from commenting on this. One thing I will say is, if I think that's good, who can trust anything? But one thing I will say, I am sad that we didn't get to hear Charlie Day's Luigi. I would have enjoyed hearing that.
Yeah.
Because I like Charlie Day. Charlie Day's funny and good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I like all these actors. It just feels weird putting them in stuff like this. Like, here's what I'm worried about, is the next movie that comes out is like a Zelda movie, and it's like, who are you going to cast as Zelda now? Like, Justin Bieber is the voice, you know? It's like,
yeah. I think I you mean Link, you imposter.
Get him.
Actually, if they cast Justin Bieber as Zelda, I would be in the seat.
Oh, man. Round us out, more Nintendo stuff or Nintendo related. What happens on
Nintendo would distinctly like you to know that they were not involved.
got nothing to do with this.
Get out your 2022 bingo cards and see if you have VTuber in a dinosaur outfit apologizes for streaming porn in Splatoon 3. Anyone got that?
No.
Oh, well, it could have been your lucky day.
I had a different costume, so.
Yeah, so I mean, this is more just like a people doing stupid funny things with tech. Apparently a group of VTubers basically used their paint color as a green screen. And then you know, put video behind it, and the video that they happened to choose was pornography. Interesting choice. The idea, I guess, they're, you know, it's all just dumb. I'm not going to say drama, because I think everyone was pretty playful about it, but streamer hijinks, and the idea was like, oh, we're all going to get together, play on a custom game, and first person to get banned on YouTube wins. Or loses. I'm not clear.
Wait, so they were knowingly streaming pornography then?
They were knowingly streaming pornography. Yeah, no, that's a whoopsie. This took effort. First off, don't put that in places that it might get exposed to people who aren't actively looking for it. That's bad form. But the creativity, you have to admire. So basically they set their ink color to completely transparent. And I think this was all done, you know, not on the Switch. This was done
you can do chroma key in OBS. Yeah.
Yep. So they probably set that to whatever the paint is. Yeah,
exactly. Set it to whatever the paint is. And then that became their canvas. And like every new medium in history, a new canvas was immediately used for porn.
Of course.
So that's the thing. Nintendo did a Nintendo. And again, macro view, probably they're rightfully so. Saying like, this is not okay. They didn't specifically name check these streamers, but they did just say like things that put this kind of stuff out there are not okay, and we will take legal action. Which caused the VTuber to apologize, which the apology was undermined slightly by this VTuber being someone in a dinosaur costume. I'm not in VTubing. Like, I see articles about it every now and again. I have no idea what's going on.
But it seems people have fun.
Yeah, it seems like people are doing something.
Yeah,
all of this story is confusing me. It's like, why did Nintendo need to make a statement? Why weren't they just taken down naturally by YouTube or Twitch or wherever they're streaming? Why did they think this is a good idea?
This is the article that makes you realize you're an old man.
Based on the clips that I'm seeing, there was no like explicit. Okay, there was.
Yeah, how's the porn, Cole? How is it?
Yeah. I'm not going to do a full pornography review. The clips that I am seeing are mostly.
You have to go to my Patreon for that.
No, my OnlyFans, please.
Yeah.
I think that it was. I'm not making fun of anybody who has OnlyFans. No, based on the stuff that I'm seeing, it is mostly clothed people engaging in coitus. Specifically, it's ladies bent over, you know. Being taken from behind.
My guess is that is just what the article felt comfortable linking to.
That's true. That also could be true. Yeah. Or like what could be put up? Well, people post porn on Twitter, so that exists. I could see Kotaku not wanting to put hardcore on there. Yeah.
If you go looking for it, I'm sure you can find it.
Yeah. So
are saying if you look for porn on the internet, you might be able to find it.
This has been episode 34 of the level.
I mean, 432. Yeah. You mean 43? Wait, a little bit. Oh, wait. No, it is rule 34. Fuck.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, well, I got it all mixed up. Point rescinded about the porn not seeming too bad.
Pornography of podcast hosts getting confused about what number represents pornography. Yeah, oh, there it is.
There we go. Yeah.
Google actually auto-completed it for me. Have I searched this before?
sometimes you find some very unflattering purple links out there.
Oh, no.
Oh, man. At least this was intentional, and it wasn't some kind of accidental tab reveal or something. That's always mortifying.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Those anime characters are certainly funny. What is even happening on the internet anymore?
I don't even know. It's not for us. That's fine.
Yeah. The second tweet, what, like, the second Twitter gets bought by Elon Musk, is there going to be a mass exodus? I'm hoping so, but I don't know.
I'm going to be less. I don't know. I have no idea how involved he's going to be. Yeah. So
it is funny how life is like a slow transformation into those old people you saw when you're younger who are just like, man, everything sucks. Like,
but I'm also like, oh, that's just progress. The more out of touch I feel, the more stuff has moved on. And that is just natural.
It's kind of more I've developed as a human.
Guys, like even we mentioned Muppets Treasure Island earlier, right? And there's some very, like, it just stands out to you in a different way now. Like, there's early on, there's like a visually impaired guy that's played for laughs in a lot of ways that it's like, that's not the right way to do that. There's, you know, a bunch of like cross dressing kind of stuff that, you know, I don't think anyone was doing it with malice in their hearts, but it's also just like, we know better now. So
yeah,
it's tough. It's tough.
No, but you want to stay on board for being considerate and being a more enlightened human. But as far as like, you're like, oh, it's not for me to know what a fucking VTuber is. That's fine. It'd be sadder to fight it than accept it. So
that's what it is. I just want to know enough to not offend people, and I literally have no interest in it beyond that.
I have no problems with that or whatever. Can I like make a tangential conversation or like I went home like a month ago, I had to talk to my parents about what a furry is because they had just heard about this in passing and were like, you know, had a very, you know, like one dimensional take on it where it's like,
the bullshit story that pops up on Facebook everywhere about the litter boxes in the schools.
I have not heard about that, but that does sound like a boomer take on it where it's like, you know, people are being forced into this or whatever, some satanic cult sort of thing. And it's just like, like what you're saying, Dennis, it's like, I know enough about that where it's like, and I know the only thing I know about it is from Andrew Callahan on Channel 5 News talking about it, where it's like a group of mostly considerate people. And it's like, furryism is being a way is like coping with like anxiety and stuff like that. And you know, like not necessarily having like the sexual component about it that people like, you know, always tie to it. Anyway, all I'm saying is I know enough about it that it's like something that seems like it helps people and it's not used necessarily inappropriately and just kind of gets a bad rap. I feel like VTubers probably like that and like, you know, whatever, do what you want to do. It's not hurting anyone, you know?
Yeah. The sense that I get is it's people who want to stream and like having the ability to play a character. Or, you know, not, you know, they want to have a face cam, but they don't want to be shown themselves because it's inconvenient. It sucks. So like, let's lean into it. That makes perfect sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As a pitch. Yes. If you want to look for it, you can find VTubers that are a whole lot weirder than that, but that's not what we're here to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just, you know what? Most powerful phrase in the English language. That's none of my business.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
However, when you start streaming porn on your VTuber thing and putting it out there as like a joke for who to get banned, that's a little not cool. So
it's like Dennis said, putting that in a place where if somebody's not looking for it, they're going to see it. It's a little,
I hope that creativity gets put towards something better.
Yeah.
That's right. You need the teacher that, you know, takes the kid out of the principal's office and is like, well, you know, you're doing detention for a week, but I'm actually taking you to, you know, whatever cool thing, and they learn a life skill. Yeah. I'm referencing three different movies at once here. So
all they had to do was just have Morbius the entire movie in behind the chroma key, and then it would have been perfect.
Do other memes. It's fine. They found the line. Just walk it back, and they can have a good time doing other stuff. It's fine.
You can even play the same game of who gets banned first, since you're sharing copyrighted material.
Yeah,
that's good. Now then the five head move is showing Morbius porn.
to some people, Morbius is porn. So.
Morbography.
And that's our show. Tip of the hat.
Get out, everyone.
How do you all feel about bunning?
I feel great about it. Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 432. We're getting up there. I actually numbered this one correctly. I drop a century off of all of the shows.
Oh, so, sure.
Yeah. So it's,
when
it's
kind I'm of, curious, when will we be up there? Like, we're getting up there frequently. When will we be up there?
I feel like we're up there.
You say getting up there. I also, you know, sometimes I'll throw in the joke like, oh, we're halfway done.
Yeah.
just to see who comes back and says, oh, you were supposed to be done at
864. Oh, yeah. Bot, remind me.
I will say, like, this has been a transformative experience in the sense of it like going back like 8 years ago and just picking a random episode and hearing us talk about it is like such a interesting process that like for me, that's like the long-term benefit of the podcast is this is weird like chronology of our lives like captured in these like tiny through this tiny
this
little
is journaling.
I mean, kind of like I still remember like I had no idea that you were gonna say like, oh, we're having a kid, Dennis.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Oh yes.
Oh, it's fun. Yeah. but yeah, if you want to have fun, you know what to do. You know all the ins and outs and what have yous of supporting a show. Just tell your friends and come back next week if you want to. Dennis, what's happening? How was the Sin City Comic Con?
Sin City Con. It was great. It's a smaller con, but I was like demoing and talking to people nonstop the entire time. So I got exactly what I wanted out of it.
Nice.
And it was kind of funny. Like I talked to some other people. It was really good just for connecting to other designers. And specifically ones that I would, you know, feasibly be able to hang out with at a later date.
Yeah.
But you know, some people who are a bit more established than I am, were like, yeah, well, this is kind of slow or it's not as many people. And it's like, well, it's plenty big for me. It's right. Plenty big for my operation. Like I was go, go, go. the entire time I could not have gotten more out of it. Nice. and had a absolute blast.
Neat.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Is there anything people can do as regards the game, or is it just still waiting for the print copies?
Yeah, everything's on a ship. I can't remember if I mentioned, but I put up a tracker. You can find it linked to in on the Kickstarter page in a couple places. But it's basically just a document that you can go to and see like, all right, what was the original timeline for shipping? What's the current estimate? What are like all my notes and thoughts on what might happen or what's impacting things? And so far I'm very happy with how close we are to the original timeline, and we'll see up to the day information on that.
Wonderful. Yeah. And the other project here is go check out Jala's podcast over at jalachan.com or jalachan.place. Her most recent episode is about the Bollywood movie Koi Mil Gaya. I believe she talked about that the last time she was on. But yeah, I think that's all the admin stuff. Let's get to the titles, although I figure I know it's what it's going to be.
Foregone conclusion.
Yeah, two weeks in a row that happened. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words, at least for a little bit longer. We'll see going forward.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, so Morbography is what I assume it's going to be. Yeah. before that, I was kind of panicking because I hadn't written anything down, but I have it's sadder to fight it than to accept it.
Talking about that's a grim one.
Feeling out of touch. Well, it's true. Right? Do you want to be the person who's like, hello, fellow kids? Or do you want to just like understand? Like, no, not for me. Not on my business.
I had Through the Fire and Dutes. And then as a throwaway just for us, I wrote down Cole's OnlyFans.
You need a throwaway to go to Cole's OnlyFans.
Oh, no.
I also had Through the Fire and Dutes. I also had Morbography. I also had Unflattering Purple Links because I thought that was a very poetic and then as a tie-in to the show, I put Unflattering Purple Zeldas. So
that's cool. Wa Zelda. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Cool. Well, I'm going to take this opportunity and try to go to bed early. That sounds fun.
Yeah, we crush right through that. Good times, guys.
Cool. Yeah. Take care, you all. Have a wonderful week. Oh, wait, yep. I need to stop. It is decided.